edition of the Key and I Conversation was recorded on Wednesday morning, October 2nd. If you hear dated references or the phone number, feel free to disregard them. It is time for the Key and I Conversation. It's the day after Election Day, sort of Election Day's Boxing Day, when you can take candidates back to the store if you want to exchange them, I think. But we have Shailen Cochran, myself, Jay Barrett, and our special guest, Assemblyman Dale Bagley. He's an assemblyman for 11 more days. Welcome, gentlemen, to the microphones.
Thanks for driving the bus this morning, Jay, and thanks, everybody, for joining this morning. Dale, thanks so much for making some time and coming in this morning.
You bet. Glad to be here, and let's talk politics.
Let's talk a little bit of local politics, and we want to get you in on the conversation this morning as well, of course. 283-8414 is the number again. 283-8414 is the number. If you have questions, comments, did you make it out to vote yesterday? Did you feel good about the vote, feel good about things the way they turned out? We're going to be hitting all of those things here over the course of the next hour. Dale, wanted to start talking about a couple of the borough-wide issues, the ballot propositions that that folks decided, and two ballot propositions, and we've talked about them a lot here at KDLL on our airwaves, about the switching to the manager form of government was one, and the sales tax cap the other. Wanted to start with that manager form one and talk a little bit about that, because this is not, as we know, this is not the first time that this question has been raised, and it's not a particularly rare thing to see in boroughs throughout Alaska.
No, it's not. Most cities in Alaska have a manager form of government, and in fact, I think almost all the cities, except Wasilla, I think, is maybe the only one I know for sure. And most of the boroughs also have a manager form of government. But it has been something that hasn't been well received here on the Kenai Peninsula for whatever reason. Back in 2010, Charlie Pierce actually introduced an ordinance to try to make a manager form of government. And it failed. 27% said yes, and 73% said no. So we'll talk about yesterday's results here in a second, but it's definitely moving a lot closer. So.
Yeah, that number did. Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because it did inch a little bit closer this time around. And I don't know if you know, after 10 years, if you can attribute that to anything. But, you know, these things come up, and it seems like the folks who don't want that to happen, it's really all based on who's the mayor at the time. And it's not really drawn up based on who's the mayor, but that's how the politics of it play out as well. You're either attacking this mayor or you're waiting for your other guy to come in. And it's been interesting for me because I wasn't here that first time around to see those politics kind of play out a little bit.
Yeah, and some of it is education. People, you know, some of it's people getting to understand that this is the way that most places do it, you know, and we're kind of the anomaly for not doing it that way. So just, I guess, for the record, let's go ahead and talk about the numbers.
Yeah.
So the yes votes were 43.2%, and the no votes were 56.8%. So it was interesting, I think about 18.5% voted, 18.5 turned out at the polls, and yet only 14.7 voted on the propositions. That number may go up when the absentees come in.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it's 43 to 56%. So it's a heck of a lot closer than it was in 2010.
It's interesting to me when you look at those numbers and we look at again, and we'll come back to the level of turnout for this election throughout the hour. But when you look at those numbers and how many people out of the peninsula actually voted, less than 20%. The argument that I kept hearing about why we should stick with a popularly elected mayor form of government is that you don't want to lose that representation. Well, what representation when you have, you know, less than 20% of people voting? Is that really the honest consideration? And I suppose for folks who vote, it is, but then there's that other 80%, yeah. You know.
Well, and, you know, so just historically, this is kind of round numbers, and there's, of course, exceptions to everything I say here, but generally in a non-mayor race,
right.
We tend to see under 20%. Sometimes it'll creep over 20 when the absentees come in. When it's a borough mayor race, we'll get up around high 20s to low 30s. Mm-hmm. A state race, 40 to 45%. And when it's a national race, you know, 60 to 65% voter turnout.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the numbers. And, you know, statistically, even at a smaller level, I think that, you know, it's still a pretty good representative of the whole peninsula. But obviously, more people turn out, the better that number will be, that,
yeah.
You know, of how people really feel on the Kenai Peninsula.
Well, and for an assembly member, I'm sure that, again, tying back to that number, you know, you're basing this off of what the polls show, and it's a lot easier to have a gauge of what people actually want peninsula-wide when that number goes up a little bit.
You bet, absolutely.
And sticking with this, with the mayor question, this ballot proposition that did fail again, I'm curious, you know, over the last 10 years, did you hear the discussion about that change at all, or was it the same kind of arguments? Did that shift at all, considering that we did see a little bit of shift in the numbers?
Well, I don't think there's been much discussion between 2010 and now. I know when it got brought up at the assembly level, it was, you know, I kind of felt it would fail. But I got a feeling, I had a feeling it was going to be a lot closer, and it certainly was. And
yeah.
I think a lot of this is just educating folks, and people are beginning to realize, I think, that this is something that is more a norm. And so anyway, we'll, maybe someday it'll happen here, and if not, I'm okay with what we got.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned educating voters. I hear that a lot, you know, in different venues, usually after, you know, something politicians want fails, like after the field house sold out in a city council meeting, they go, well, we just have to do a better job educating the voters. And, you know, the same thing here. Two things. One, should we assume the voters aren't educated? And two, in some municipalities, you know, election municipalities, they have a moratorium against bringing the same thing up for a minimum number of years. So the thing just can't keep
going. We're
going
to talk about that on the next one.
Okay.
I was going to say, this sounds like an idea that might get some traction here.
We're going to talk about that on the next ballot proposition. But anyway, I mean, I guess to answer your question, though, is I do think that there are a lot of voters that they read the voter pamphlet. They do follow what happens at the assembly. They do know what goes on. But I can tell you by the number of calls I received yesterday, people in a panic about how they were going to vote on different stuff. You know, there's a lot of people, they go about their lives and they just don't follow this stuff and they don't really know what there is to think. And I know I talked to a few people that were very surprised to find that a manager form of government is the norm in Alaska. And really it's the norm of most of the United States
as well.
I mean,
pretty much anywhere you go, yeah.
So that's kind of a learning curve for people to understand that, and they don't always know that. So I think sometimes, I don't know if I necessarily agree with trying to maybe educate the voters before, but sometimes through the election process, people learn more about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. You've been mayor more than once.
Two terms.
Yeah. What would you think if you were, would you run for mayor if there was a manager form of government again?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was mayor, I did let my real estate license lapse because it was a full-time job and you were paid a full-time salary, so I didn't try to do both. I think that there are benefits to both, and I think from my perspective, a mayor, being mayor and being able to still work would be nice. You'd still have veto power. It is, you know, you're wearing two hats when you're a strong mayor. You're the mayor of the borough. You have all the political side of things. But at the same token, you're manager dealing with, in the borough level, about 400 employees. And in the summer, that number grows even more. You deal with all the schools, the maintenance of the schools. You deal with management contracts with two hospitals. So it's a big job, and there's a lot that goes to it. And I don't. Do we have a little time here? I'll tell a story.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, so one of the things that I always like to tell people is that, you know, here's how a strong mayor approaches a thing. I had a guy that always wanted to pay his tax bill in pennies, and
that guy,
and the finance director got mad about it and wanted to pass a rule that there could be no one paying in pennies. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to listen to Sound Off forever go on about how we're not taking legal tender, because pennies are legal tender, right?
Sure.
And so we actually bought a, what are the pieces? It was $150. You set it there. You dump all the pennies in. Mm-hmm. It comes out rolled. It works out great. For $150, we solved that problem. And I think that's the difference between an elected mayor that was thinking of the public perception and a finance director who was probably more like a manager who just looked at it from his way of taking care of the problem. And so that's kind of the difference. And I think it's a great analogy for the two. So.
Well, It highlights the different skill sets involved, because the mayor position is a political position. You're out there to win a popular election. You have to appeal to the broadest number of people, and that's not necessarily the same skill set that comes along with being an effective administrator. And in some cases, it is. Some people do have the business chops and that sort of thing, but it's not everybody. And you know, as we've heard a lot throughout this debate about whether to keep a strong borough mayor or switch to a manager, you know, you can elect your next door neighbor to be mayor if you want to. Doesn't mean they're going to be good at the job. Who knows? It's really interesting to watch it all kind of develop and watch this conversation happen too.
Yeah. You know, the what do you think of the consistency in the operation of the borough government? You know, the department heads, you know, are the same. They generally stay the same if you have a weak mayor, you know, a manager form of government. But a lot of people run for mayor because they want to get that so-and-so out of the planning department or out of this department or the other department, right?
Yes, and I think that it really hasn't happened a whole lot. You know, I mean, there are probably some changes that get made. I know when I got elected, there was one individual I definitely wanted to change. It was a personal issue with me, and I felt the department would work better with somebody else. I made other changes through the course of my 6 years, but it was based on performance. But in that case, there was one person I didn't want in that position. And sometimes you have that. I mean, when a mayor comes in, I think they should look at the departments, and they should look at what their goals are and what they want to achieve, and you know, who's going to help them achieve those goals.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, the other thing that you heard during this debate, and when folks would offer public testimony, is this idea that, you know, when we elect the mayor, then that mayor is accountable to us, the voters, and if we don't elect the manager, they're only beholden to 5 votes on the assembly. And what are your thoughts on that, on that argument that we're only beholden to these 5 votes on the assembly as a manager?
Well, I'll tell you what, as a manager, if you're going to be beholden to only 5 votes, you're going to have a very short tenure, you
right.
know. So I mean, I think they have to look at the whole assembly, and the assembly is, if you have a manager that's not doing well in the city or borough, those council members or assembly members are going to be hearing about it, and they are answerable to the public. So I think that a manager is still answerable. It's just it's a little more indirect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can say, you know, just in terms of if we're talking about accountability and transparency and those sorts of things, from a reporter's standpoint, in the city of Kenai, city of Soldotna, where they do have strong manager forms of government, I'm calling the city manager about way more stuff than I'm talking to the mayors about, because it's the manager who's there working the day-to-day things. And so, at least in my narrow and limited experience, that's the person that you go to. They're there day-to-day to manage it. That's their whole job, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say on that, though, is at the borough level, you almost need to go more to the department head, because
exactly.
It's a manager.
It's such a bigger...
Yes, and that's, I know when I was mayor, you know, I would direct people to the managers who actually knew all the stats, knew all the issues.
They've already got the books open.
You know,
yeah.
One of the things I always like to say is that when you hear something, especially something complicated, you need to hear it 7 times before you can regurgitate it, you know, the same way that you're hearing it. And to have a department head walk in your office, tell you a problem, and walk out of that office and expect you to regurgitate it to somebody else exactly right. the way you just heard from that department head isn't probably going to happen very well, you know. So that is, I'm all for, in fact, I had no problem at the assembly level getting that manager up there to talk mm-hmm. to the assembly, because I know I wasn't going to regurgitate it as well as that manager could, and the manager would be available to ask questions that maybe didn't come up in our discussion, yeah. you know, the day before.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Well, otherwise it just turns into like telephone game, right?
Yes.
And speaking of telephone game, we'd like to play the telephone game with you. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation this morning, 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414, talking all about local municipal elections that just wrapped up last night at 8 o'clock, and we've got soon-to-be former Assemblymember Dale Bagley in the studio with us to kind of digest some of these numbers and take a look at some of these issues that voters have decided on. We were talking about Proposition 1 and the mayor's form, and speaking of this idea of needing to learn a chunk of information, hear a chunk of information several times before you really truly get it, I think that's a good segue into the other ballot proposition, which was yet another tax question on the ballot for voters to decide. And voters, this goes back years and years and years. When a tax question comes up, there's just not a lot of traction there for tax questions. And this one, I don't know, for my money, this one was slightly more complicated, because it wasn't like a direct increase in a percentage or anything like that. There was, you know, sort of this intermediate step. We're going to raise the tax cap, which will translate to this kind of a number. But just sort of in general, what are your thoughts on all these tax propositions that have come up over the years and the voters continually saying no thank you?
Well, they have said yes to some.
Yeah.
So, you know, the 2% sales tax, a 3% did pass. So there are some that will pass. I guess this is getting into the politics of things. I looked at it that due to the fact we lost the tax on groceries, due to the fact the personal exemption went from 20,000 to 50,000, due to the fact we lost revenue sharing, you know, there's been some continued pressure on the Kenai Peninsula Borough to balance the budget. And we've really needed to do something. And my solution to the problem was a bed tax. And I've tried, I actually got it past the assembly twice, only to have two different mayors veto it,
mm-hmm.
and the vetoes were upheld. And, you know, Mayor Pierce mentioned in his veto that the sales tax cap was what he preferred, and he was part, you know, co-sponsor of that with Ken Carpenter. And I, you know, this is getting back to your issue of, you know, keep asking the voters over and over again, and it's something I'm not happy about.
Right.
This is going to be the third time in 4 years that this question has been asked. With this, I guess, was the closest, but still, it was a resounding defeat.
Mm-hmm.
So I, in fact, let's just real quickly run through those numbers.
Yeah.
So the election yesterday, it failed 54.6 to 45.4%. So in 2000, well, let's just go back to 2017, it failed 59.6 to 40%.
Just let me interject here,
yeah.
For our listeners. We're talking about under 700 votes out of 7,000 cast on that.
Yes.
So about a 10% difference in the votes. Well, obviously from the percentage parts, but it's only 600 or 700 votes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but from it's actually a, you know, in that, well, in this last one in 2017, 59 to 40%. It's a 19% difference, though,
right.
and it that is a quite a bit, actually. The other year was 2016, and it was 57% to 42%. So the numbers are fairly consistent within, you know, 55 to 49% no is pretty much what we're seeing there. And I just have a problem. I have a problem asking the voters over and over again, hoping for a different answer here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was talk about hopefully they'll get educated this time. I don't know. I didn't see anything really happen toward that. I know Mike Navarro went around to some of the chambers, this is 2 years ago, went around to some of the chambers and Rotary and whatnot and gave talks and tried to tell people. But you need to get, you know, that's a fraction of the percentage that's out there. And it is kind of an issue that people don't totally understand what the cap is and how it works. You go in and buy groceries, it doesn't impact you. It's only on the high dollar ticket items. I know that from a car dealership, it really kind of does become a big deal though, because you know the bigger ticket items are cheaper in Anchorage, and there's no tax there, and it starts to become worth going there. So I even though this hasn't been changed since it's implemented, and if you work the math over time, it really should be like close to $4,000 instead of $500. You're still competing against Anchorage, and I can see why business owners haven't been very supportive of this over time.
Yeah.
Let me ask your opinion then about the bed tax, which, you know, people aren't competing with Anchorage or the Mat-Su for beds, because if somebody's going to come to the Kenai Peninsula, they're going to come here.
Right.
You know, the bed tax seems like a no-brainer. It's all outsiders bringing money here and leaving it.
Yes, I
don't. But it's got that three-letter word at the end.
I don't think that was it. For some reason, there was just political pressure on some people to oppose a bed tax, and you know, and it was kind of heavyweights in the industry that were leaning on assembly members and the mayor both times, and. You know, I think the battle of whether there should be a bed tax has been fought and lost a long time ago. There is nowhere in the United States that's a tourist destination, or for that matter, really even Alaska, that doesn't have a tax, a bed tax.
Mat-Su.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to Hawaii this winter, and I think there's a bed tax at 14.5%, and then there's like a 9% excise tax on top of that. So it's like now, 21% or something.
Yeah. When you were making plans for this trip to Hawaii, did you look at the tax rate there and then go, well, maybe it's a little bit cheaper in the Cook Islands. Like, I'll just go to the Cook Islands if I feel like being in the Pacific and I want to avoid a bed tax.
Nope, that was not a consideration. So
no, that's one that also I don't really get. And I guess it's just I for me personally, I think it's this idea that, well, the borough doesn't need the money, so why should we put it on the books? Why should we put this tax on the books?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because if there is if we bring in more money than we need, we can lower the mill rate. And this is money coming to the borough from the people that are coming here. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know, you know, Land's End throughout about there's some people from up here that go down to Land's End and Homer and stays there. I get that. But that is a very, very small percentage of their business on peninsula travel, you know, and staying in hotels. Mm-hmm. By and large, it's off the Kenai Peninsula. It may be Alaska residents. I know that's how they tended to confuse the issue by saying Alaska residents. Hey, I don't care about Anchorage. I think we should tax the heck out of Anchorage if they're coming down here. Especially on the beach when they're dip netting, but that's a whole nother issue.
I was gonna say, we can do another show on that one.
So I think taxing other people in Alaska and people from the lower 48 is a great thing.
Well, and you mentioned the mill rate. You know, that's one of the few avenues that the assembly can take without going to a vote of the people to increase revenue. So you know, that's one relief valve. If the assembly decides we need revenue, that's like the main one for the assembly action.
And then you're putting the tax burden on the people that own homes and businesses, mm-hmm. you know, and land, and not everyone does that. And I think, you know, that's you want your tax bases to be as broad as you can and not just hit one group of people really hard.
Well, and that's, you know, the bed tax, I don't know if it's just suffering a marketing problem, and because I think of it as like a normal sales tax. It's just a sales tax for this sort of particular industry and activity. You know, when you talk about a broad-based tax, that's a pretty broad-based tax. It targets visitors who are staying here on a temporary basis, you know.
Yeah. Some of the heavyweights in the industry that were here were complaining about it, that were lobbying against it, that we're talking to assembly members, that we're talking to the mayor, you know, where they have other hotels in Alaska all have a tax except for here. Right. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah, why do they care?
Yeah.
When I would see representatives from regional or national chains that have an operation on the Kenai, and they would have their manager come and speak against it, I thought, but this tax exists everywhere else you do business. Why is this place going to be
the
your one
place?
I guess that's just lobbying dollars at work.
So I watch these assembly meetings online a lot. And
I'm sorry.
I know.
Maybe that's a revenue rate. We could start doing some commercials in the assembly meetings and
Mountain Dew. Yeah. Dale Bagley supports Mountain Dew.
This mayor's brought report to brought by. To you by, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, I see some regular folks show up there during comment period, like every meeting, and all they kind of do is rail against taxes. And, you know, I'm just wondering, if they have a perfect right to do so, of course. I'm just wondering if the atmosphere they're creating is contributing horribly to this.
Which that's a kind of a chicken and an egg question. Which comes first, the attitude against taxes, or you know, the fact you live someplace that doesn't have any taxes, so you don't want to see more of them come in. So, you know, I don't know. I think that attitude's sort of ingrained a little bit.
Well, and I think it's all relative to where you live, because you know, we're one of the least taxed areas in the nation, mm-hmm. and yet folks will pound the pulpit and say we're taxed way more than anyone else, and we're not. And some of it, you know, you need to decide on what your priorities are as a government. We're a second-class borough. We don't do a whole lot. We're, you know, we respond to fires. We take care of trash. We educate kids. You know, we have the platting powers. We have some other different service areas, a rec service area, flood service area. You know, we have mm-hmm. to do a few other little things, but those are a service area voted on by the people in their area. So, you know, we're very limited in what we do, and I think that's a good thing. And if we ever do want to do more stuff, then we need to vote on those items, and there'll be money that we'll be needing to go to them at that time.
Mm-hmm. So, well, talking about, you know, the role of the borough and that sort of thing is almost wading into, or at least it sets me off on that path of talking a little bit about annexation. Maybe we can do that a little bit later on in the show, just based on what.
Oh,
that,
sure, you just had to go there.
I just had to go there. We'll get there in a little bit. Would love to hear from you during this hour here on the Kenai Conversation. Shaylen Cochran with you this morning, alongside Jay Barrett and our guest in the studio, Assemblymember Dale Bagley, breaking down election results from municipal elections that took place yesterday. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation, 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. Maybe we'll get. Maybe we'll take a little break here as we near the bottom of the hour. When we come back, I'd love to talk about, maybe we'll get some calls on this too, the sort of changing dynamics of how campaigns seem to be run on the Kenai Peninsula. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that when we come back for the second half of the show here. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. This is the Kenai Conversation. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us. Thank you. And welcome back to the Kenai Conversation here on KDLL. Shaylin Cochran with you this morning alongside Jay Barrett and our guest in the studio, Dale Bagley. Recapping election results from municipal elections that wrapped up yesterday, and spent a lot of the first half of the show talking about the borough-wide ballot propositions, both of which failed. And, of course, we'd like to hear from you coming up on the second half of the show. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. And Dale, wanted to gauge your reaction a little bit on this, just as someone who's been involved in borough politics for some time this year, and I'm coming at this from someone who's only covered a handful of elections. It seemed to be, we saw, you know, a lot of these negative ads, and they were targeting specific candidates, and that seemed to be something that we haven't seen much of, or at least I haven't seen much of. I'm wondering if that's something that you've seen in the past, and of course, people have always had strong political opinions, and there's, you know, people putting notes on windshields and that sort of thing, but this seemed to be take it to a slightly different level this year.
Yeah, the ads that were done by that group was totally unacceptable, but I don't believe that you're going to see that again, and I don't think it's changing. You know, I don't think it's changing to that this is the way things are going to be. It is the way things were this year, but I think it was an anomaly, and I hope we never see it again.
Well, it is kind of the wave of the future. I mean, it was a social media campaign basically, mm-hmm. and I don't know that those are going away.
Yeah, so we do have a
phone call.
Caller coming in.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. This is H.S. Norwood to thank Dale Bagley for years of service. I just think you've done a marvelous job. Not that we've always agreed.
No, but we have
you
sometime.
Sure represent, I think, your district. And then, of course, since I'm in a non-incorporated part, well, too. So thank you. And then I did want to comment on, I think it's despicable what happened in this election.
Yep.
And I think that my friends and neighbors should hold the people accountable who never said that they, we need to take that down. We'll see if we can take that down. They never commented how nefarious their tactics were. And we are talking about a Kenai Borough Assembly seat. And it's just getting too, you don't need Republicans, Democrats, nonpartisan. You just need people that are going to help with our roads and our schools and the trash, just as you said a little while ago. So I think you need to hold Blaine Gilman accountable and Wayne Ogle and, you know, the dude down in Homer that wants to make sure Zach Brown can build his place and not have any people able to use the roadways that they've used to pass it. Ask them what they were doing. If they keep doing this, you're not going to have people running for our borough assembly seat. And that's all I wanted to say. And thank you, Dale.
Thanks. Yeah, I it's going to be interesting seeing what all comes out from this from APOC. And I think APOC is not done investigating this. I know they're not done investigating it. And, you know, we'll see how things all come out. I'm not sure I totally agree with who all was responsible there, but we're going to see how this shakes out, and APOC will wade into this, and my guess there will be some fines somewhere along the way.
That's worth mentioning. The Alaska Public Offices Commission does still, last I checked, which was last night, this group Alaska Yes staff from APOC did file a formal complaint, and they haven't responded to that complaint yet, but that's something we've been paying attention to. I've been hitting refresh on that APOC website a lot more this year than I ever have before. That's for sure.
They move very slowly.
Yes.
Sometimes sure. Very, very slowly. We should point out the Alaska Yes group, all of their candidates lost. They were backing Jonathan Quick in the Assembly District 3. He came in third out of three. They backed Rose Henry in Assembly District 4. She came in second with 41%.
But I think won Mackey Lake narrowly.
Oh, okay, I don't have the individual precincts here.
Yeah, and she did by five, six votes.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And District 7, Holly Odd, who I have not met anyone who has ever met her.
I have met her.
Oh, I have, yeah.
Wow. And this brings up, I'm glad you brought that up, because this brings up, I'm calling it sort of the Holly Odd loophole, where her eligibility to even be on the ballot was called into question, But what was interesting is that we found out that the borough code doesn't really allow for the clerk to kind of dig in and figure out, was this person actually here? Are the excuses or the reasons they have for not being here legitimate? Do they hold up? Is this proper? There's nothing in borough code to really
Well, there's some stuff in borough code, but I think there is going to be a revision that's going to be coming before the assembly this winter to try to tighten up some of this stuff. But I think, you know, I don't know how much you guys watch football and the replays that are going on now. And I think that the decision that was made in this case was to let the election happen because you can't redo the election.
Right.
So that was kind of the end result on this is her residency was questionable. She definitely was not here when she needed to be here. She had a reason for it, but whether that reason was good or not,
there's no avenue to sort of substantiate that.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think there's going to be more on this in the future. But I guess I reluctantly agree with the call that was made there that, you know, let the election happen, because if a court somewhere said, okay, she has a valid reason for those first 2 months, well, you can't undo, you know, you need to let the election happen, I think. And in this case, because of the results of the election, it's kind of a moot point at this point. So,
yeah. Well, and as we pointed out, just in terms of this strategy, you know, and the caller pointed it out too, one of the things that I noticed is just you had a handful of candidates who never really answered questions, were not available, and I don't think that serves anybody well.
And I want to talk about that a little bit. Yeah. So I don't think what was done with the negative advertisements really, I think if you had taken that out of the equation, there wouldn't have been much different with these results. You have three candidates. I don't know how else to put it. It was almost an arrogance that we don't need to do this and that we're going to get elected without doing this. But they didn't come to a lot of the forums. They didn't want to be on the radio stations. Mm-hmm. They didn't run a lot of ads. They were very low key. I also have a problem with three candidates who aren't involved in their community. I think that if you run for office, you need to be involved in your community. The three that won are very involved in their community and very active with a lot of different stuff. And it showed in the election results. And, you know, people want to know who you are. I have seen the one that for the Salatna Assembly District. I have seen her at assembly meetings. But if I've ever met her, I can't remember meeting her. I haven't seen her around town at different events. You know, I think you need to be involved and in your community and be part of your community. And people need to know who you are, how they can get a hold of you, you know, see you at these events and let you know how they think on something. And I think if you're not involved in your community, you really shouldn't be running for office.
Well, you know, I had two of those folks scheduled for the Kenai conversation last week, right? Odd and Henry. And, you know, they have their contact information on the borough website, and Facebook is easy to look them up. Heard back once from Henry, but not at all from Odd. And, you know, I mean, if you're going to put yourself out there, at least make yourself available. At least say, screw you, public radio. I'm not going to talk to you, you liberal commie pinko or something, you know. But at least call me back.
At the end of the day, I think we saw that whatever strategy might have been at play here did not seem to be a successful one. So I guess there's that as a takeaway.
Yes.
Well, Dale Bagley joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation, gracious enough to be in with us this morning, and thanks for answering that call, Dale. Shaylen Cochran alongside Jay Baird. Of course, we'd love to hear from you this morning as we break down election results from municipal elections that wrapped up yesterday. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414.
I had a question about, did you have something?
No, go ahead.
Talking during the break about partisanship and nonpartisanship in elections like this, and Dale, you were saying that, you know, a nonpartisan election doesn't mean that people of a political likeness can't support one side or another.
Yes.
How would you break that down with what appears to be a Republican Party that's splitting right now into ultra-conservatives and the regular conservatives?
Well, I would say that isn't anything that hasn't happened for as long as I've been around, there's always been a battle.
You sound like a Democrat.
Well, and you have it at the Democrat level on the national level right now too, where they're splitting on their views. That you know, I don't. You have most of the presidential candidates that are very leaning socialists, and yet that's not a mainstream view by even the Democrat Party. So, you know, it is kind of a thing where you see that happening, and it just is, there's always a battle for control, and people that get involved at your precinct level and your district level are always fighting to, you know, push their ideology a certain direction mm-hmm. by taking over the leadership for that district. So anyway, it's always going to be out there, and you're always going to see that. So it just is what it is.
Yeah, but well, how are you? I know for a fact that you're not as conservative as some, having been in conversation with you and followed your career. You know, let's say you have a devout Trump follower, you know, comes in and wants to set the peninsula on fire, figuratively. you know, and cut the place down, you know, you're not going to be on their side.
No. Well, I don't know if I totally understand the connection between the Trump follower and I'm not totally under. I mean, I guess I voted for Trump, so I don't know if I'm one of his Trump follower or not. But, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that you see is that folks, a lot of the folks that the mayor listens to are so far to the right that there's not much difference between those of us more toward the center. And I look at some of the Democrats on the assembly, some of the Democrats in the House, and myself, and I see a big difference. And yet some of these people are so far to the right that they don't see any difference between us. And that's where the real problem is.
The people on the right don't see any difference
way to the right don't see a lot of difference between us, and so that's why they tend to...
No, between you and the centrists.
Yeah.
Towards the center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I understand. I thought at first you meant between them and you.
No. They're so far to the right, and there's people that are so far to the left that they don't see any difference between Republicans and Democrats a lot of times because their views are closer together. There was a gal that was doing the testing that people could go see where they were on the political spectrum, and it looked like a gun sight.
Yeah.
And I always fell right where the circle is, you know, right on the right side, but right where the circle is. But a lot of these folks are even further. They're either way further to the right, or the interesting thing is if they are a what's the
libertarian.
Yeah. Then the interesting thing is they're up high on the gun sight and they take from both sides. Mm-hmm. So then they tend to hate everybody. So, you know, cause you know, they're going to hate everyone on the Republican side. They're going to hate everyone on the Democrat side. And so it's interesting things, politics and where people fall on the scale of things is interesting.
Well, yeah, also probably why, libertarian views don't wind up getting much traction because everybody hates them on both sides.
Well, it speaks to the idea that, you know, sort of ideological purity, and especially at a local level, at a borough level, just doesn't really make for, well, just doesn't make a lot of sense, because the matters are far less ideological when you're talking about should we pave this road or not. This is not a conservative, liberal sort of an argument. It's a, we need to get down
sometimes,
this. Sometimes it can be.
Where does that come in? That's a good question. Where does the...
At what point? Yeah. It's interesting, and it's one that I've been thinking about, especially, you know, going back to the last borough mayor election. I saw so many parallels between the last mayoral election between Charlie Pierce and Linda Hutchings, and just it just seemed like such a mirror of what was happening at the national level at around that time. And I don't know what the answer is, where local politics become something bigger than local politics, but... It's interesting to think about, because you really do think about local issues as, you know, all politics is local, right? This is where supposedly we're supposed to have the biggest effect as an individual voter. But at some point, you know, you do want to stand true to what you're voting for in the booth and those sorts of things. But yeah, interesting to entertain that.
Yeah. But,
Dale, where does partisanship come into play locally then?
Well, and I guess I talked about it a little bit during the break. A lot of people believe that nonpartisanship means that Republican parties and Democrat parties shouldn't be involved in the local elections. And I disagree with that. I do think that you should know who you're voting for, and I think that they should be supporting. I think where the confusion is it just means that you don't have a R or a D behind your name on the ballot, and there isn't a runoff to go into the main one. That's really what that means. The Democrat Party has been very active for candidates in this area, and so has the Republican Party, probably less so. I'd say the Democrat Party has been more active at the local level, just quietly, and so they've both been very active with candidates and school board and, you know, it's and city council races. So, you know, it has, I think it's always kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm talking too much here, but it's always been kind of interesting to me how liberal sometimes your city councils can be, and yet when you move on to the state level, there's only one or two people that can ever move on to the state level because this is a conservative area, mm-hmm. and yet you have very liberal mm-hmm. City councils sometimes.
Well, and again, that's sort of a microcosm. You look at state-level politics, and urban areas tend to be more liberal than rural areas, and you go down to the borough, well, it's, you know, the quote-unquote urban area within the city of Kenai or Soldotna might tend to be slightly more liberal than those outer areas of the borough. Just...
Yeah, you got to put up with your neighbor when you're
that's
crammed
right.
together in a city.
That's
so
you gotta
have those kind of beliefs, I guess. Or when you live out in the boonies.
So I want to go back to the paving the road because that's an interesting deal. Because
where's the road going?
No, I'm talking about paving the road. So the way it works here is it's a road improvement district, and as long as 60% are okay with it, the road gets paved and. And then everyone that lives there is an assessed amount, which is really kind of heavy-handed when you think about it. But you do have this standard of 60% supporting mm-hmm. it, and it does improve the property for that area. But you said that that isn't always political, but believe me, that can be very political because you can have a percentage of the people that don't want that road feel the government shouldn't force a assessment on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so even that can get kind of dicey at times with where your view is. In fact, on the city council level, it's the reason why Tim Cashman got involved in city politics.
That's right.
Is because of that old
issue.
And again,
at the local level, that's why so many people do get involved, because they do have a pet issue or a certain issue that they want to bring attention to, address, whatever it might be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as that goes with annexation, a lot of people don't seem to understand that it's a legal practice that I think our founding fathers put in the Bill of Rights or something. I don't know. It's been written down for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people think that the city of Soldotna just invented it?
That's an interesting way to phrase that question. I don't...
I don't know the answer on that, but I think really what... A lot of folks are unhappy about is not being able to vote on it
right.
locally. However, my argument would be who gets to vote? Because in one of those areas, I have a business. As a business owner, I don't get to vote on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know. So in other words, you're annexing in that particular area, K Beach, you're annexing that area, and yet there's two small subdivisions that are going to be the ones to decide this whole issue. And so... I can see both sides of this issue. I can see the frustration of not being able to vote, but I can also see, you know, is it really fair to let the handful of people that live in that area be the ones to decide for the business area of that area that does not get to vote?
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's a really interesting issue just in terms of, you know, Alaska's a young state. The cities within Alaska are still growing and developing, and how do we do this, and how do we do this in a way that doesn't incite riots, basically? And it's an interesting question, and I don't know. I'm curious how hard the local boundary commission is going to bite if the city's case is essentially that we want to try to bring in more sales tax revenue from the surrounding businesses that are or soon will be using our services. And then you take a big chunk of that out through that amendment, which removed a lot of that
right.
commercial corridor along K Beach. Well, you've sort of taken away your biggest reason for annexing in the first place. So I don't know what the local boundary commission will think of it. If they really go back and look at how this process has gone along.
Yeah, I don't either. we'll see. I don't know if there is any real hard and fast on decisions on the Boundary Commission.
Yeah.
They've been kind of all over the place on some of this stuff. So, and then, of course, it ultimately would have to get approved by the legislature based on a recommendation from the Boundary Commission. So,
yeah, and so there are multiple ways to weigh in, if not a formal vote. From a borough assembly standpoint, just from the borough standpoint, when you look at whether it's annexing certain areas to become a part of the city of Soldotna or whether it's looking at turning Nikiski into an incorporated city, what are some of the things that a borough considers when you're looking at losing some of that taxable land?
Well, that's an interesting deal because I don't think it's a big issue for the borough to lose the areas that the city was looking at doing. You just switch from the city maintaining the roads to the borough maintaining the roads, and it's not a big deal. It is a very big deal for Nikiski to try to annex the whole oil and gas area out there because it'll have a huge impact on the roads around the rest of the Kenai Peninsula. The road mill rate is 1.4 mills, and I believe it would have to go up significantly if you lost the oil and gas revenue, and that's really how they're looking at funding their government out there is from that oil and gas revenue. Mm-hmm. So I think the Boundary Commission, though, hasn't really liked the idea of a mini borough inside of a borough, and they want it to be more, you know, a smaller area, and that's a problem that they've been trying to work with to try to grab as much of the oil and gas as they can, but make it small enough that the Boundary Commission is okay with it.
Yeah. Hmm. And that's if the state doesn't come in and get some of that oil and gas property tax dollars.
Right. Can we shift gears real quick?
Sure.
There are a number of races for council, specifically, that had no the candidates had no opponents. Lisa Parker ran unopposed in Soldotna. Both candidates in Kenai and the mayor in Kenai ran unopposed. You know, it seems like such a dichotomy. We have some races that are that are hammer and tong, and then other places races that seem seemingly important. City council, you know, it's just like, well, that person's fine.
Yeah, I we've always seen that. I know I first ran for city council in 1994, and no one put in to run against me, and I was just sure that there was going to be a write-in campaign to run against me, because why would the city fathers want this 29-year-old, wet-behind-the-ear person to ever run for city council? You know, it's just like somebody's going to wake up and realize that, you know, they need to do something about this, you know? But nobody did, and that started off my political career. And then a year later, I ran for borough assembly. And in fact, that's kind of an interesting deal because the guy that I was running against, I can't quite remember his name, but we actually rode together down to the meeting in Homer. So it was, you know, why both drive down?
Right.
So, you know, we shared a ride, and I think I went with him. I think it was the way it worked. And he offered, and I said yes. And so it was a very mellow campaign, and I know there's been some campaigns that get that way and some campaigns that aren't that way. So,
well, and it's always interesting to cover a campaign where you have two candidates where there's no daylight between them, and they're probably going to vote for each other, you know. but it also speaks to, and this is something that when you talk about low voter turnout, of course, you know, you always want to encourage as many people to vote as you can, but at the same time, there's a certain aspect of low voter turnout that I think sometimes speaks to approval. You know, there's not a reason for people to be all fired up and storm the polls and demand change. They're, you know, more or less okay. And if that speaks to a lack of engagement from the voters, that's not necessarily a good thing. But you can, I guess, sort of spin it the other way and say that there's some tacit approval attached to that.
Well, and some of that is just the fact that people don't always understand that local politics can affect your pocketbook and your freedoms more than the state and federal level, but they tend to think it's the other way around. And that's why you have the bigger voter turnouts for the national elections and less for the municipal elections. So, I mean, I think trying to get that word out is a good thing. I mean, we haven't touched on, I guess we have a couple of minutes here, but I know that there's been a task force working on, stakeholder group working on election results or election, how to do the elections. And one of the things is a hybrid by-mail voting that's going to come out from that or is recommended from that. And I you know, it's an interesting deal because I've seen back in the 90s when I was on the assembly, we had these communities that if they dropped below, I think it was 15%, they went to a by-mail ballot, they would have 25 to 30% numbers, and so then they would take them off that by-mail ballot, and they'd immediately go down below 15%, which would trigger it going back. Uh-huh. So this went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for years. One year you'd do precinct workers, the next year you'd do by-mail, until finally in the late 90s, we just made them all, well, nine of them, I think, made them by-mail ballots only. And we have really good results from those communities. And I know elsewhere, Oregon has done it. But I will say I have concerns about the process. And I know the borough clerk is very confident that those things can be worked through. And they probably can. But that's the big issue, is you want confidence in the process.
Yeah. Dale Bagley joining us this morning here on the Kenai Conversation alongside Shailen Cochran and Jay Barrett. Yes, sir?
We have 1 minute.
1 minute, and we're just about out of time. Well, I guess in that 1 minute, one last question for you, Dale. Any plans to run for Soldotna mayor?
No. No. We're hoping to actually build a new home that'll be outside the city limits, so that would take care of that anyway. So no.
All right. Well, a special election is coming up in the city of Soldotna, so election season mostly wrapped up, but there is one more to look forward to. I think in December is when that's going to be going on. So, well,
what is next for you then, Dale? You're out of a job.
We bought a motor home, and we're traveling more. So both my wife and I are workaholics, and we are trying to become less workaholics. So that's what's next for me.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I hope that works out for you, because it is important to slow down.
It is.
Anyway, well, I want to thank you, Dale, for joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. Thanks to the folks who called in, and thank you for listening. Jay Barrett for driving the bus for us this morning. You can check out this episode and all past episodes of the Kenai Conversation at our website, kdll.org. And I think that'll do it for this week.